Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the show. It's an ensemble program with lots of good people involved, and the host of the program is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. And now here's Carol starting the program off in conversation with Melody Moisey. She's an Iranian-American Muslim activist, an attorney, and an award-winning author. She's written a book. It's her autobiographical account of her struggle with bipolar disorder. Its name, Haldol and Hyacinths, A Bipolar Life, published by Avery.
Now, in your insightful memoir about mental illness, you point out, and I think it's so important, that there's a big difference in our society in the way people are treated who have a physical illness versus a mental illness. So you were in college and you came down with pancreatitis. And what kind of support did you get from your friends and family?
Yeah, it was very different. Yeah, I had a pancreatic tumor, a benign, very rare pancreatic tumor that almost killed me. And my family was amazing. My extended family is an Iranian-American. I grew up in mostly in Dayton, Ohio, with a large Iranian diaspora, actually. And they were all so supportive, showed up in my hotel room and drove all the way from Dayton to Chicago to be there. My room was so full of flowers that the nurses were giving it to other patients. It was just so vastly different from what I experienced when I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And after my first psychiatric hospitalization, it was night and day. And I already thought that the whole healthcare system, regardless wherever you are, is dehumanizing. For sure. But compared to the so-called physical health care system, our mental health system is beyond dehumanizing. And for me, I was in an actual mental health facility. For a lot of Americans, our largest mental health facilities in this country are actually jails and prisons. So I actually had it good, and it still wasn't so great.
Well put. Do you have any idea, Melody, why it took 10 years before you would receive the proper diagnosis of bipolar disease, because they kept telling you that what you had was just depression?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. It takes on average 8 to 10 years for most people with bipolar to get a proper diagnosis. And I will say both my parents are physicians. My best friend from high school happens to be a psychiatrist. My sister is also a physician, as is her husband. That diaspora I was talking about in Dayton, all physicians. Nobody got it. It's, for one thing, you don't want to be diagnosing your own family. Secondly, I think I was a successful person in general, and I think bipolar has a level of stigma to it that at this point, thankfully at least, polar depression doesn't have as much, although there's still a great deal of stigma associated there. I think it was the least worst diagnosis, for some people who said, oh, well, some psychiatrists who said, oh, well, you must not be, you couldn't be as functional as you are. You couldn't be finishing graduating law school and writing a book and getting a master's in a period of 4 years with a serious mental illness. It turns out in a lot of ways what they call a serious mental illness, also the way my mind works, which partly is disordered, part of that actually helped me in achieving the things that I did in my life and being a successful person. There are a lot of very successful people, much more successful than I am, living with serious mental illnesses who would never talk about it because of the stigma. But I think the reason it took so long is the same reason for a lot of people as well, which is just that they don't necessarily mention mania in particular, because mania for me, hypomania, mild mania, had become sort of my normal. And people thought, well, she's just highly functional, until it came to the point where I had a psychotic break and I was no longer highly functional. I was delusional and having hallucinations. And it took that point for me to have a complete psychotic break and acute manic episode. For me to get finally a proper diagnosis, and that was after my first hospitalization.
Now, did all the negative advice that you got, I mean, your parents wanted you to keep it secret, and your medical team told you you had to lower your expectations for yourself,
mm-hmm.
Did that really cause you to become an activist, or were you already an activist mm-hmm. for other causes?
I was, and I've been an activist since I was a kid. I rounded up the neighborhood kids when I was about 7 or 8 to get the ice cream man to come to our neighborhood and make signs.
I love
and
it.
Protest. And he came. And if you want to go to Wooden Shoe Lane in Dayton, Ohio, the ice cream man still comes. It's actually one of my most successful endeavors as an activist. But since ice cream, right, after that, my first book was about young Muslim Americans. I've been an activist since I was a kid. It was just, you know, and especially after 9/11 was when I wrote the first book because of the stigma actually associated with being Muslim in America, and then people were saying that it wasn't possible, that it was some sort of oxymoron. At any rate, what happened to me later on was being diagnosed with a mental illness, and when I went into the hospital realizing that 25% of Americans, learning later on that 25% of Americans in a given year are diagnosed with a mental illness, and 50% of Americans in their lifetime will experience a mental illness, a diagnosis of a mental illness, I realized this isn't some tiny minority of people, right? Like Iranian-American Muslims, that's a small number of people, you know? But I was suddenly part of this one group of people who were a much larger group, and yet so much more silent, so much more ashamed. And I fully believe that the shame, the fear, the stigma, all of that, and the silence, those keep us sick more than anything else. Four of the top 10 causes of disability in the world are mental illnesses. And I don't think it's the illnesses. I think it's the stigma.
Now, as an activist, for those of us who have a friend or family member who have a mental illness, and so many of us do, and have seen that some of that person's friends or relatives no longer visit them because they don't know what to say or how to interact with them, do you have any advice on what you can possibly do or say that might prove to be helpful to someone who has a mental disease?
I think to be there for them like you would for anybody else, and not to lower your expectations for them. And especially for family members, setting boundaries in the same way that you would set a boundary for somebody who had a substance abuse issue, for example. Having a mental illness isn't an excuse for bad behavior. There are medications, there are treatments, it takes a long time for a lot of people to get the proper medication and the proper treatment in order. But for one, I mean, obviously don't give up on us, please, but at the same time, don't enable us either.
Fine line. Now, the medications that you just mentioned mm-hmm. that are often prescribed for people who have bipolar or some other form of mental illness, mm-hmm. they often have, you know, disturbing side effects,
right?
Cognitive defects, weight gain, kidney problems, mm-hmm. and this can result in people just stopping taking them,
right.
And then that leads to even more problems and deteriorations.
Right.
So have you been tempted at times to just stop those pesky medications? And how have you been able to keep taking the pills that are prescribed for you? Was it tough?
Well, I don't just take the pills that are prescribed to me. I don't just do anything that somebody tells me to do. I have a partnership with my physician. I will not work with coercion well, and I think most people won't. And you'll notice that, for example, with the use of restraints in hospitals. You know, once you put restraints on somebody, they quickly become the kind of person who belongs in restraints, even if they didn't belong in restraints in the first place. I really don't believe in coercion as a positive means of affecting change. I think the way that you do it is you build partnerships. And the idea of becoming noncompliant, it could be that the medication is making somebody worse, and you need to be conscious of that. This isn't, a lot of people like to say mental illness is just like diabetes. Of course, it's an illness, just like diabetes is an illness, but they're very different. There's no magic bullet like there is insulin, right? So these
right.
medications, some of them can actually cause the problems they're trying to fix. Somebody needs to feel comfortable telling their doctor, well, you know, this medication is making me extremely foggy. It's making me gain massive amounts of weight, which in some of these side effects, unfortunately, drug companies have hidden, and there have been lawsuits, and over $1 billion, for example, with the Zyprexa lawsuit. And that's a drug I take, to prevent mania. But when you take it regularly, they had hidden a lot of the metabolic side effects, for example. But I think you need to work together with your physician. And if somebody's being noncompliant, think for a second that there might be a reason. And maybe there's a better medication. Maybe there's a better regimen. And maybe less is more in some cases. A lot of people with serious mental illnesses tend to be over-medicated. Making us zombies isn't treating us, you know. Sometimes we'll be willing to tolerate certain side effects or certain symptoms even of the illness if the drugs, because the drug side effects are so harsh. So I think we need to work together and try and put ourselves in other people's shoes for a moment.
agree. And we need to have more education about the fact that we need to do more research because we really don't know
exactly
what causes these mental illnesses in general. And I think it would be a real breakthrough, you know, if we're able to find out all those things. And that I'm hoping in the future that's going to happen. So talking about the future, Melody, what lies in the future for you? I know you're very busy. More than
busy. You know,
busy.
I made lots of plans growing up. I was very ambitious, and I had the plan to be an international human rights lawyer and win the Nobel Peace Prize. When I was like 8 or 9 years old, I made this plan. Turns out plans don't turn out so well. I found that God has put me in the places I need to be when I need to be there, and I find that he laughs at my plans. So I will not make any, but I will say that I will continue writing. I will continue being an activist, and that's all I know for now. And I am working on another book right now about the mental health system. So.
Oh, well, you'll have to come back and talk about that. And also, I, you know, was pleased to learn that you believe, and I believe too, that it's valuable about the way your mind works because it allows you to be so creative and think about things that a lot of people wouldn't. And that's a very good thing.
Yeah, I'm so happy for that and grateful for that. And I wouldn't want to glamorize it, but whether it is that you have bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or dyslexia or autism or whatever makes your mind work differently, there's a gift in that. And just in the same way that we'll have problems that other people won't have, we'll also be able to see solutions in places that other people can't see them. So I don't want to give that up. That is a gift.
That's Melanie Moisey in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Haldol and Hyacinths, A Bipolar Life, published by Avery. More conversation with Carol Marks and interesting folks next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation with Chuck Klosterman. He's a New York Times bestselling author of 7 previous books, and now he's going to talk to Carol about his latest. It's titled, I Wear the Black Hat, Grappling with Villains, Real and Imagined, published by Scribner.
What made you want to write about our culture's love affair with anti-heroes, past and present? And why don't we have that love affair with heroes as much?
Well, that's a very good question. And maybe it is sort of the inescapable thing. The reason that, you know, I can't predict what people will be interested in. Like, I can't, you know, I've written 8 books now. It's just impossible to try to figure out what people are looking for. So what I do is I just write about what's interesting to me personally, and I hope other people kind of share that interest. And what I noticed was that as I have grown older, I'm 42 now, first book I wrote, I guess I was 27, that as I've aged, I have found myself more sympathetic and more, I guess maybe even more empathetic to people that the media frames as villains. And I'm not just talking about real people in the news. I'm even talking about fictional characters in books and in films and on television. And I think that there's something inherent with the maturation process that sort of makes you understand maybe what makes someone seemingly bad, what makes someone problematic. That it's not just like they woke up and they were evil, but the things that built their life, how they were raised, where they were raised, the conditions of their job, the conditions of society, all these things sort of shape a person. So I became more interested in thinking about what makes the public decide that someone is good or bad, and once that's established, what their relationship with that individual is like. Now, your second question was, why don't we have that relationship with heroes? Well, you know, to an extent that we do, but it's obvious. I mean, we know fundamentally that if someone, you know, is the hero of a story, or, you know, we watch the news and a person runs into a burning house and pulls out a baby, we know that that person is beloved. You know, it's a very simple relationship. It's that this person is doing something that we aspire to do, or that we see them giving something to society that society needs. So it's not very complicated. But the relationship with villains is very complicated and seemingly sort of expanding, particularly when you watch television now.
My goodness.
If a show is sophisticated, typically that means the main character has some sort of villainous qualities.
And I never thought of it that way, but you brought up, you know, The Sopranos was the first show that really had the main character as a murderer, and it just seems that we've gone further and further in that direction with having really villains be the main character, and I just wonder if that makes it easier for us to hate other people just because we're watching these villains all the time.
Well, you know, it's possible. What you're sort of surmising, I don't think that's in any way a radical sort of perspective. But when you think about it, this relationship has always kind of existed. It just changed through different mediums. I mean, you can find novels from the 18th and 19th century where the main character is a problematic character, where the main character is doing things that make him seem or make her seem like she should be a villain in a normal story. In the 1970s, that really happened in film. When you saw the Godfather movies, there were kind of a string of Jack Nicholson films from the early 70s. That was the first time in, like, kind of mainstream film we saw this happen. In rock music and in hip-hop music, it really happened during the 80s. And in television, it didn't really happen until the 90s. And, you know, you note The Sopranos, that's sort of the linchpin of this, or the turning point, because, you know, David Chase created that show. And when he was creating The Sopranos, David Chase had this fear that audiences would not accept a character like Tony Soprano. They would just not be comfortable rooting for somebody who's fundamentally a criminal. And it turns out not only did they accept it, they kind of embraced it. They loved it. They couldn't get enough of it. And now it's kind of all television is.
Right. And, you know, you write in your book about sometimes, because I consider him a villain, becomes a folk hero, and that was in the case of the guy that stole all the money, T.P. Cooper, and he tried to put a bomb on a plane, and he was able to mysteriously get off the plane. And, you know, it seems that the public gravitated to him somehow, and even the people, the hostesses on the plane, liked him.
Well, it's part of it, you know, it's true, and also just, you know, I think D.B. Cooper is a great example of just a small thing that shows how America has changed. You know, in the 60s and 70s, there was almost a plane hijacking culture. It wasn't that shocking to hear that happen. Typically, the plane would be hijacked, flown to Cuba, people would get off the plane. That would be kind of the whole story. It was not seen as a great thing, but it was understood that it could happen. Well, the world has changed in a way now where the idea of a plane hijacking is about as terrifying a situation as anyone can fathom. It was impossible to think of a modern D.B. Cooper, somebody who hijacks a plane with a bomb for money and becomes beloved. But D.B. Cooper still is, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, a beloved character. I was introduced to him probably when I was 7 or 8 years old. There used to be a TV show called In Search Of, where Leonard Nimoy was the host. And they did an episode about D.B. Cooper, and I've never forgotten seeing that. Like, it was interesting to me as an 8-year-old, it's interesting to me as an adult, you know. I can't see a corollary of that happening again, though. That couldn't happen now.
Wow, and one of the things that you wrote about the book was not in the book, was not exactly about villains, but it was so interesting because you wrote about really one sports hero and one entertainer hero. You wrote about Kanye West and you wrote about LeBron James. So what did you write about them and what did you have to say? Because I really found it interesting.
Well, Kanye West is a rapper who I'm a big fan of, but is an incredibly arrogant figure. He's like,
just
very egocentric. Okay. LeBron James is the best basketball player in the world. And recently has sort of been, kind of re-embraced by the country because he was turning to his homeland of Cleveland and talked about how much he loves Northeast Ohio. And I have kind of a mixed relationship with those guys. Kanye West, who I really like, I kind of like to see him make a bad record. I'd kind of like to see how he would deal with failure. Because he's got such a big ego, it'd be interesting to see how his art would be informed, by hardship. Whereas LeBron James, I'm not a big fan of. I typically root against him when I'm watching sports. But because he's such a great physical specimen, I need him to succeed in order for him to have any role in my life. So I kind of talk about the idea of liking someone and hoping that they fail, and disliking someone yet hoping they succeed, which seems like a real paradox, but I think it actually happens to a lot of people a lot of the time.
We just don't think about it in that way, and
you made
me think. And talking about villains, we did mention, you know, television and how much they are portrayed on television and they're the stars. But then you have the whole role, and I think it's just growing, of internet and the social media, where we hear about people as villains, and it happens so fast. So someone can appear to be a villain almost overnight. What do you think about that phenomenon?
Well, you know, that's something that's just the acceleration of culture. Things happen faster than they used to. The entire life cycle of a news event happens faster. You know, when you think back to even just like the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky scenario, which I wrote about, that really kind of, America was engaged with that problem for almost 2 years, okay? Even now, if something like that happened, it would be so much more rapid that we would basically have the entire experience maybe in 3 months. There are stories in the news, the Malaysian airliner that disappeared. That was wall-to-wall on CNN for a week. It was basically the only story they covered. Well, now it's gone entirely. You know, so the idea of us having these long kind of relationships with people or with news, that seems to be like the fastest disappearing element of the culture. Now it's almost like we need to have the whole experience in 3 days.
That's Chuck Klosterman in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled, I Wear the Black Hat, Grappling with Villains, Real and Imagined, published by Scribner. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by Mike Kanojian, the managing editor of Talkers Magazine. Talk a little bit about what's going on in the media. That's coming up when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and this is the time when we customarily are joined by Kevin Casey to talk about what's going on behind the scenes. Kevin is, of course, with Talkers Magazine. Kevin's on vacation, and we have Mike Kanosian with us. Mike Kanosian is the managing editor and West Coast bureau chief of Talkers. Talkers is the trade publication of the talk radio world, and you can visit it at talkers.com. And Mike, this has been a milestone in terms of the passing of a great legend in the broadcasting industry, not specific to talk radio, but television. And he had a radio background. I'm talking about the great Don Pardo. What did Don Pardo mean to our industry?
First of all, Michael, it's great to be with you. And secondly, you and I did not prearrange this, and I really could not be more thrilled to talk about Don Pardo. Unfortunately, not under these circumstances, of course. But what Don Pardo meant to the broadcasting industry is immeasurable on a variety of levels. And specifically, I will tell you this, that there's a body of work that he's responsible for. So we can put that into one area. Then when you think about what he influenced and how he influenced others to go into broadcasting. So he's on two tracks. It's what he did accomplish and how he affected others. There aren't too many people in the industry who either consciously or subconsciously do not in some way, in my opinion, mimic Don Pardo. There are people of a certain generation who just regarded him the way they should, which was the zenith, the absolute ultimate of broadcasters. You go with a great voice, that's one thing, but he knew what to do with it. And because of Saturday Night Live, this guy became a pop culture icon. And there were times, of course, when he appeared on camera, but mostly off camera, he was the quintessential voice in broadcasting. What a tremendous, tremendous loss. He was 96. Did not look it, did not act it. Obviously lived a full life, but his influence on broadcasting, absolutely immeasurable.
Well, it also goes to show you that at 96 years old or 95 years old, you could be doing something that young people enjoy and, you know, flies in the face of conventional wisdom that after a certain point you're, you know, washed up. If he had lived to 196, he would probably still be popular with people of all generations. And the good news...
I think he did have a cult following among young people as well as his contemporaries. And as you know, he was in the Weird Al Yankovic video, which was the great takeoff on Jeopardy. And he could make fun of himself, but I do think that he had a great following of all ages.
Well, I certainly appreciate your giving us some insight into him. Again, we could not possibly do a segment with Talkers Magazine and about radio and about broadcasting without paying tribute to the great Don Pardo, who passed away this week at the age of 96 years old. Mike Kanojian, Managing Editor, West Coast Bureau Chief of Talkers, we appreciate your joining us. And folks,
thanks so much.
And folks, you can visit Talkers at talkers.com right there and find out what's going on in the world of talk radio. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor seat here in A Touch of Gray, and A Touch of Gray continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman, who's in conversation now with actress Andie MacDowell. She's known for her role in the movie St. Elmo's Fire, Groundhog Day, Four Weddings and a Funeral, and she's the star of Cedar Grove. And now she's going to talk about Stories of Strength, a program that encourages people to honor the men and women who are their sources of support and strength by submitting stories through photo and video on Instagram or visiting their website. We'll give you that information in a moment. Here's Steve.
You know, one quick question, because I know you're here about the Stories of Strength program, which I find fascinating, but I was wondering, some of the actors you've worked with, like Hugh Grant, Bill Murray, Kermit the Frog, did Kermit do much ad-libbing?
Actually, you know, the actors that do the Muppets are amazing, and I even found myself, you know, I did a lot of interaction with, well, I've done, you know, a few things with the Muppets, and I've loved every chance I've had to work with those actors. But you find yourself interacting with them as if they are real. Because the puppeteers are underneath the ground, you don't see them. And they do such a great job, you almost feel like, you know, they're real people. It's the most fun. You really do find that child inside of you that that will just go with it and have the imagination to believe that they're real. It's a blast. They're very talented.
That's fantastic. Now, did you have the same feelings about Bill Murray, that whether he was real or not?
Bill is really bright, very intelligent, and he's deep. You know, there's a part of him, that's why he's been able to go on and do all these great serious roles, that it's very complex and interesting and deep. But he has a kind of humor that is, you know, extremely unique and dry and just super funny. And I loved working with him. He was, it was so much fun. It was always fresh. It felt real. You know, it always felt real. It wasn't, I was always fresh, because every take we did, I mean, he was so original every time. I just felt like I was in the moment. We just had a blast. It was a lot of fun and great pleasure.
That's terrific. Now, you've been a hard-working actress for many years. I was looking at the list of your credits, and you are a mother. And was it hard when your kids were younger to balance being a mother with your work?
I think for all women it's hard. And now men too, you know, men are taking a much more close-knit role in the family. I mean, how we parent is, you know, has changed a lot. We share so much more in that relationship, and I think men are having closer ties with their children. So it's hard on all of us when we have to leave them or find out how we're going to do it or find the balance within the family unit of who's going to work, who's going to be sure the kids are okay. You know, that whole journey is, it's a tricky one. For me, being a mother was something that I wanted from a very young age. I'm extremely maternal. I find that part of my life very valuable. My family is valuable. My kids are valuable to me. That's, you know, I love my job. And I'm so thankful that I'm at an age now where I don't have to worry about kids anymore and I get to do whatever I want to do. I mean, of course, I still worry about my children and I'm close to them and I try to see them as much as I can, but I don't have to feel responsible anymore for tiny kids. And, now I get to do whatever I want to do, and I'm loving working for Cedar Cove and having this chance to be this independent woman finally after all these years.
Well, it works out eventually. Now, you're here today to talk about a program called Stories of Strength, which is sponsored by Tylenol. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, my daughter Rainey and I had this opportunity to tell our story of how, you know, my mother helped teach me to empower me, to give me my power, my strength, and to show me, to be an example for me of what a strong woman was, and Rainey was telling her story and Tylenol. And we got along really well, and I do use Tylenol. You know, I used it with my kids. It's something that I've always depended on, and my family has. And we were very comfortable. And Rainey and I also enjoy people. We're big people. We enjoy people's stories. We like encouraging people and helping people to uplift people. And this was a great opportunity to see what other people thought their stories or strength were. And a really sweet way for us to share our stories, and cathartic for me because my mother was an alcoholic, and so much of it and the stories have, you know, they've just repeated that story over and over again, but there's a lot of valid and beautiful parts of my mother, of course, and this gave me an opportunity to talk about, you know, those assets that she had, because she had a lot of wonderful assets as well.
When you were thinking about your mother in retrospect now as a grown woman, did you find a new, deeper understanding of maybe some of the things that you had with her and your relationship with her?
We had a really tight bond, my mother and I, because I was the last child. She divorced my father when I was about six, and she never remarried. And so it was just us. We watched TV together every night, and we had a very interesting relationship. I ended up working at McDonald's with her when I was in high school, and I really saw her struggles of, you know, what she had to deal with because of genetics, you know, it's alcoholics. They say now they're genetically predisposed. And by the time she finally quit, when I started modeling. I got a heartbreaking letter from her saying that, you know, she was going to do that for me. She had quit drinking. She quit drinking the last year of her life, and then she died. I mean, it was just a terrible, terrible loss for me. It's something that's, you know, I lost her when I was 23. Mm. But I do want to hold on to all the wonderful assets that she have and I had, and I try to remember those all the time. The how she mothered me, you know, the wonderful ways that she did mother me, and how she inspired me, because she did. She always told me that she believed in me and that I was unique and I was gifted, and she, you know, she made me feel like I could go out and conquer the world. And a lot of the beautiful things that she also taught me was my mother. She was a teacher. She loved her students. I mean, I went to classes with her when she was teaching music, and she exposed me to play. She took me to theater. You know, there were a lot of wonderful things about my mom. So it was great that Tylenol gave me this chance to be able to talk about the positives.
You know, what's so good about that, too, is Your daughter Rainey, who's participating in this program with you, looks to you as her inspiration. And did you fully understand, or were you aware of how much she was inspired by what a great mother you have been for her and the other siblings?
Yeah, you know, it was really nice to hear it. I don't think we don't sit around and talk about these kind of things enough. And I think that was one of the things we liked about the program that Tom and I was doing, was it was giving people this chance to say to someone, hey, this is what you did for me, and you gave me all this strength. And I thought that was a beautiful concept, and it was lovely to hear, you know, it was heartwarming to hear everything that Rainey had to say about me. And, you know, it's been being a parent is a great gift, and you always hope that you get most of it right.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can win the American League batting championship only getting one out of three hits. So, you know, parenting's got to be pretty much the same as well. You know, it's such a beautiful thing, and particularly, you know, in this time where recently the passing of Robin Williams, it makes you think about time is finite, and you wanna thank the people who have inspired you. So where can people go if they want to contribute their stories to Stories of Strength?
It's TylenolStoriesOfStrength.com, and I believe that's right.
I hope it's right, too. That's Andy McDowell in conversation with Steve Wiseman. And again, the website is TylenolStoriesOfStrength.com. Steve Wiseman returns to A Touch of Gray in just a moment, talking about the death of Robin Williams. That's next.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is an author. He's a lawyer. He is an expert on so many of the topics we talk about in this program. He really is quite an expert on scams. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and his new book is titled Identity Theft Alert. Also, Prentice Hall is the publisher, and it's everything you need to know about identity theft. And we'll be talking to him on a future program about that subject specifically. Right now, he's here to talk about the death of Robin Williams. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, you can always count on scammers and identity thieves to capitalize on every tragic event that captures the public's imagination. And celebrity deaths seem to be of particular interest to many people. Following the deaths of celebrities in recent years, such as Whitney Houston, Amy Winehouse, and Paul Walker, Scammers and identity thieves set up scams and identity theft schemes to take advantage of the curiosity of the public about the deaths of these celebrities. The recent sad passing of Robin Williams by suicide has brought new scams and identity theft schemes again. And you can expect these to start turning up on your Facebook page, where they often appear to be a post from someone you know, when in fact it's really from an identity thief who hacked into the Facebook account of a friend of yours. The post will provide a link to be able to view photographs of Robin Williams purported to be police photographs that have not appeared in the news, or maybe on a nicer note, maybe it'll be for other videos or photos of him in his career. Unfortunately, if you fall for this bait by clicking on the link, what's going to happen is you're going to end up downloading a keystroke logging malware program. And what this will do is it'll steal all of the information from your computer, and including credit card numbers, passwords, bank account information, and use that to make you a victim of identity theft. So remember my mantra, trust me. You can't trust anybody. And merely because a post on your Facebook page appears to come from someone you trust, that's no reason to consider it reliable. Posting could be merely from someone who's hacked your friend's Facebook account. Other times, the posting may indeed be from your real friend. However, that real friend may unwittingly be passing on tainted links that they've received. When it comes to news, you should rely on legitimate news sources, like the websites of the major news stations, like CNN. When it comes to celebrity footage, well, you may want to limit your sources to only those that you know are legitimate and can trust, like TMZ. If it isn't on TMZ, it doesn't really exist. It's a scam. Also, make sure you keep your anti-malware software up to date with the latest security patches. But I do need to remind you that even if you do have the latest security patches for your anti-malware software and antivirus software, you're not really going to be totally protected, because they're always the good guys, about a month or two behind the bad guys in finding these patches. So, yes, it's a sad event that we lost Robin Williams, and you may want more information, but be careful where you go.
Thank you, Steve Wiseman. And check out scamicide.com, Steve Wiseman's website about scams and fraud, and his new book is titled Identity Theft Alert. It's published by Prentice Hall. You can find it anywhere. You can find it at scamicide.com or at amazon.com. Steve Wiseman, thank you. And thank you to Beverly Santanello, our producer on the front line, who puts this whole thing together, makes it all click. I also want to thank Mike Kanosian, who joined us from Talkers Magazine. And thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program, for the fine work you do on behalf of the people of this planet. That's about how big her scope is. And thank you for listening. I'm Michael Harrison. On behalf of all of us at A Touch of Gray, please join us next weekend right here for another installment of the talk show for grown-ups.